This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
If it's a plan, there's nothing wrong with reshaping the way that people provide accommodation in the UK. If you're saying that the private rented sector is not something we want to really invest in and we're going to do everything we can to try and chip away at that, but you've got to have a 10-year plan, you've got to do some build to rent, you've got to provide billions of pounds worth of social housing to fill that gap. Because at the moment, there's going to be a big hole in the middle where if there is an intention to do build to rent or lots of social housing, it takes a long time for that to happen. With the best will in the world, you're 5-10 years down the line, potentially putting in plans to decimate part of the private rented sector. So it's not very joined up is the point I'd make, if that's the plan.
Welcome to Series 2 of the Property Podcast with Wards and me, Gary Wilson, the weekly podcast where I'll share with you all the latest Kent property news, as well as speaking with industry professionals to offer advice and tips that will hopefully help make your house move journey a little less stressful. Welcome to part two of a very special two-part episode of the Property Podcast with Wards, Series 2. For this, the final episode of the series, I sat down with some very special guests from Wards to discuss how the UK government could do better to help the housing market. With me in the studio for this conversation were Aldo Sotju, Group Managing Director, Jason Budding, Managing Director of Operations, James Stefani, Lettings Business Development Director, Gavin Welch, Financial Services Director, and Neil Piper, Senior Operations Director. Enjoy part two of our conversation.
I was going to move on to talk a little bit more about tenants and possibly landlords, because this sort of always comes almost comes full circle back to Gavin and Neil's point earlier. You're a tenant in a rented property. You want to be a first-time buyer. How are you saving up that money to do it? Because rents are rising. At the same time, house prices pretty much are rising, depending on where you look in the media to support your views. We need to do something to stabilise rents for tenants, to help them save a bit more money. And I think it's a bit of a strange thing, but you've got to then improve the supply to the rental market to help the first-time buyers who are tenants currently, or people who want to be first-time buyers, to leave the rental market. So you've got to stop squeezing landlords quite so much with taxation and some of the legislative changes that are coming and that have happened. Most of the changes in legislation are good and well-meaning, but from a landlord's point of view, it introduces more hoops to jump through.
James, I think the challenge there is that for landlords to invest and for also for landlords to maintain their properties, they need to be making profit. And that's the big shift recently, because lots of landlords who were making profit
are no longer. Section 24 taxation changes were a killer.
Exactly right. So I think that's key, because I think there's a lot of good landlords out there who want to provide good quality housing, but they're being squeezed from all angles. And we're seeing that. We're seeing less investors wanting to add to their portfolios at the moment. And it obviously does one thing, which is drive rents up. So there's a circle which needs breaking. But landlords need to be able to feel that they can make a little bit of profit.
I think there needs to be some form of rent control. But what you can't have is a situation where landlords and private investors are penalised on the very reason why they made that investment in the first place. Mm. But there are things that government can do to support affordable rents. So there's other things that they can do in terms of grants or supporting tenants that might be having problem, you know, paying their rent in the private rental sector. Without that, it has a big problem on, you know, the amounts of rents that are coming into the market. And James, we know at the moment we're experiencing a lot of landlords that are choosing to dispose of their property because they're worried about increases in capital gains tax, yep, which is like the sword of Damocles hanging, yep, over private investors. And actually, the government are almost shooting themselves in the foot, because whilst those properties might be coming onto the private sales market, they're actually too expensive for the very first-time buyers that we're wanting to get onto the housing market.
The exact problem.
And it's a vicious, yeah, self-perpetuation.
So the best form of rent control is to have more available properties.
I think it's a really counterintuitive thing that needs to happen. And it would be massively unpopular for this particular government to do what's needed, which is to increase the supply of private rented property. You know, to do that, you relax the stamp duty surcharge on purchasing. I think the narrative of landlords being public enemy number one is not helpful.
No.
Yeah, it's not helpful. The vast majority, and the vast, vast majority of landlords provide good quality housing that's required. There's just not enough of it. If you've got a supply and demand problem, which we've had and we've always had, and it's getting worse, then the market will naturally find a level. And it's finding a level at a higher level than would be the case if people were entering the market. And, you know, we talk about, you know, landlords, I think they've been demonised to such a mess. And I look back to a lot of what happened during the pandemic and lockdown, and I can remember at that time I saw the very best of our landlords that were offering rent-free holidays. They were offering accommodation to doctors and nurses for free to live close to hospitals. Yeah. So for me, I've never really lost that feeling about how good people generally are and how good our landlords are, because you get to see, you know, you get to see people in adversity, and I think that was really telling. So I think there needs to be a bit of a rebalancing. There are rogue landlords. Very few of them use letting agents. You know, they are. That's the bit that's missing. It's a bit like the Wild West. You're letting your own property. You don't understand the masses of legislation. You make mistakes, so you don't have smoke alarms. You don't look after properties that have got mould because you don't know. And effectively, you know, a buy-to-let is a mini business that you're running. So it's very difficult to do it on your own. You need some help. You need a. I would say this, but you need a good quality. And I know one. You need a good quality. You need a good quality letting agent. And there are lots of them about. That will be able to get you through the minefield of legislation to look after tenants effectively and create a really good investment for you, a good return on your investment. But I think again, it's no good just throwing a bit of red meat to the media about landlords being terrible.
Well, Jessica, just one example of that. Yeah. Maybe James might comment on this, but the whole thing about no fault evictions.
Yeah,
you know, it was a big political furore around no, and for us within the business, there was never really an issue with no fault evictions. No. Most landlords, as you said, are good people, and you know, would not just arbitrarily ask a tenant to leave their property through
it's
no
commercial
good
suicide.
Yeah. So there's a lot of politicalization of that, which actually I don't think in reality that wasn't an issue in our business.
It's not what we see in our business, and it's not what most of the letting agents and landlords see. You have a good tenant, you keep hold of that good tenant until they want to move on.
It's usually the case with Section 21s being asked for, it isn't usually the tenant.
You know, Section 21 is just the easiest route to end the tenancy from a landlord's point of view. Vast majority of landlords serving a Section 21 notice want to sell the property or they want to move back in themselves. They don't want to get rid of a tenant to find a new tenant who they can charge more rent to or who won't complain as much and cost them more money in maintaining their property. Almost all of our landlords, in fact, all of our landlords are great, and they want a good long-term tenant who pays the rent and does all the things you'd want a good tenant to do, but they want to provide them with a nice environment to live in and make their home.
If it's a plan, there's nothing wrong with reshaping the way that people provide accommodation in the UK. If you're saying that private rented sector is not something we want to really invest in and we're going to do everything we can to try and chip away at that, but you've got to have a 10-year plan, you've got to do some build to rent, you've got to provide billions of pounds worth of social housing to fill that gap. Because at the moment, there's going to be a big hole in the middle where if there is an intention to do build to rent or lots of social housing, it takes a long time for that to happen. With the best will in the world, you're 5-10 years down the line, potentially putting in plans to decimate part of the private rented sector. So it's not very joined up is the point I'd make if that's the plan.
I mean, Jason, the other two moving parts that we said earlier is the red tape that prevents that from happening. And also, if there was more freedom in terms of building projects, actually having a workforce, a skilled workforce that is readily available to support those building programmes. We don't have that skilled workforce, which is a separate, you know, discussion itself, but it is part of that narrative.
Yes.
With the landlord thing, and it is a case, you know, everyone wants to sell newspapers and get your attention online, and we'll put up a story about the rogue landlords who are letting people live in pretty much squalor. And, you know, that's all a great story.
Yeah.
You guys know the truth about that. Is there another aspect that is widely believed by the public which is as wrong as that, as when it comes to the property market? So is there another aspect that people think about property that actually is way off the reality of where you are?
I think from a tenant's point of view, I think a lot of tenants just imagine their landlords to be incredibly wealthy people who have many, many properties and money coming out of their ears. It's not the case. As we talked about Section 24 tax reforms, squeezing landlords a bit more. A lot of our landlords actually became landlords, one, because previous governments had actively encouraged it as a way of building for a pension and for your retirement, but they haven't really...
Some were accidental.
Yeah, accidental people.
Probably a fair proportion
inherited property and things who didn't know what to do with it. And they don't have disposable income at the end of each month after covering all their outgoings against the rental property and their own property. Interest rates rising over the last couple of years really hasn't helped that as well. So they don't have buckets of money left over to fix a dripping tap every time there's a little problem. But they have to. They're required by law to do it, and the landlords will do it. But it's another reason, going back to Neil's point earlier, why it's less appealing, it's less doable for landlords at the moment, because they don't have even a small profit in a lot of cases to put right all the things that they have to do. So that's why landlords look to leave the market.
I think to answer your question, I mean, we don't see those extremes of substandard properties within a managed, professional managed environment. We are part of helping to control the standards of properties that are available, and we assist our landlords in understanding the responsibilities that we have. But there's a lot of parts of the industry that, you know, aren't regulated, and I think there's a potentially a bad reputation that the industry has to suffer because of a much smaller proportion of instances where tenants haven't been looked after effectively. That makes good headlines. So a very small proportion of issues actually seems to infect a much wider part of the business, which actually is pretty well regulated, and we are very supportive of that, and we want to do our best to ensure that within the industry is being properly regulated, properly managed, but it's got to be done in a fair and proportional way at the same time.
It's a really highly regulated industry. I think there is, the sufficient laws are in place to make sure everything runs effectively. It's fair to landlords, it's fair to tenants. I think when you do see these, the horrible stories that you hear about people living in squalor and places that aren't fit for purpose, it's just very interesting when you read further into the article. There's very rarely a letting agent attached to it, and that's the bit that seems to be the gap that's missing.
Well, it's what you said, it's the Wild West, isn't it? It is,
because it's the ones where they're being let without, you know, any due care or attention, and it will be the advert in a newsagent's window, and that's no way to do things these days. That's going back to Victorian times. It's, you know, we've gone beyond that. And as I say, it's a much more professional industry now if it's done properly.
James, you know more than me about, is it AWAB's law?
Yeah.
And that was in 2021. I think there was some government intervention.
That was the young boy.
And this is
young
in social housing, so not even in the private rental sector. So a social housing corporation was looking after, in inverted commas, a property that had mould and mildew, and the tenants complained, nothing was done. And this poor little fella ended up dying through respiratory problems caused by sort of exacerbated circumstances around mould and mildew. That's something that is very likely now to extend. There's a AWAB's law is going to come into social housing, was already planned to with the previous government. That is incredibly likely now to be extended to the whole of the private rented sector as well, which is absolutely should be. But it frustrates me that needs to become a law, because that should just be good practice.
Yeah.
It shouldn't need to be backed up by legislation to say, well, you must do these things in a certain time frame to ensure the safety of your tenants.
I mean, it's decent human behaviour,
Is that a lot of the, you've talked a lot about red tape. Is that where the red tape, is that where it comes from? Things like that, where it should be obvious that we behave in a certain way, then red tape comes in to say, here's the legal to cover that. But it's a bit clunky and it doesn't quite fit, and maybe they haven't asked quite the right questions of you guys. Is that what the red tape's all?
I think the law is all done with the best intentions, but there's just a continual layering of those best intentions, which just creates another step and another hurdle on top of a whole raft of things that are already heavily regulating the industry. And that's one of the problems we have to navigate our way around, legislation which is changing all the time. And we're, you know, we're professionals in the industry and finding it difficult to keep on top of things and understand exactly what our responsibilities are, let alone the hundreds of thousands of landlords that have got no professional help themselves and are just effectively trying to navigate their way through an industry which is changing all the time. So it is a problem, and one that, you know, we have spent, you know, many many hours debating and trying to come up with solutions for our own business.
I mean, it's the risk of where landlords may head. If they don't make a profit, they're going to look to save money. One of their bigger expenses past a mortgage on a property is going to be the letting agent's fees. So, okay, well, let's cut out the letting agent fees. I can save myself some money. But actually, do I know what I'm doing as a landlord? As Jason said already, many of them don't. But you don't know what you don't know until it becomes a problem. And I think that's the bigger issue, where governments are not necessarily quick to legislate, but they're quick to try and protect tenants, which is absolutely right, where you see things going wrong, which is where we have, you go back 30, 40 years, you just have a very general landlords, you must provide a safe environment for your tenants. And then, okay, something bad happens, A. Wemslaw being one of them, Grenfell being another one, where we'll see much more stringent fire safety regulations coming along, gas safety, electrical safety more recently. For 4 years ago now, they made it compulsory for landlords to have electrical safety certificates. They're all a response to very bad things happening in rental properties, but they're all things that good landlords already did. So they're legislating for the bad landlords. To Jason's point earlier, the bad landlords don't use letting agents. The bad landlords are not necessarily, how do you find them? So one thing you can do is have compulsory licensing for landlords, but how do you still make those bad landlords join that? I don't know how that problem fixes itself unless there's a definitive register of all landlords that tenants must check before they rent a property. But I still think you'll find, even with that in play, you'd find that some tenants are so desperate to find a property. You know, we have 18, 20, 25 people for each property that comes available. They need to find accommodation somewhere. So they'll go through any means necessary to find themselves a sensible property.
Yeah, it's a case of never making the enemy of the good, isn't it? If it's making things better, then it's making things better. You know, there's no such thing as perfection.
As Kent's local independent estate agent, Wards utilise years of experience and expertise to promote your property in the best possible light to the largest possible audience. For more information, receive an online valuation in less than 30 seconds or book an in-person appraisal of your property with us today, head over to wardsofkent.co.uk to find out more about our unique approach.
With the time flying by, is there, let's call it, any other business? I think we've covered a lot, if not everything. But if there's anything anyone feels we might have missed.
I'd like to jump in there. I think, Gary, I think Jason made a really good point about bonds, French bonds.
I think I was very surprised. I've never seen so many heads nodding when someone said, well, the French do it this way. That was incredible.
That's a rare moment.
It was a rare moment, people of France.
We need to support first-time buyers in raising their deposits.
100%.
And then that pushes everything upwards.
Yeah.
And it sort of allows people to start moving through the housing ladder. And until we get that right, and taxation, then it's still going to be far too hard for somebody who's just starting out. You're talking about four-year-olds having to start saving money to get on sales on the housing market, you know, when they're 20 and 22 and 23. And that's got to change.
And that could be a first-time buyer property bond. It could be some money being deducted at source, tax-free, that gets ring-fenced to be. There's ways of doing it. But I think there's got to be hope. There's got to be hope for first-time buyers. And there isn't much at the moment. And I think that's one thing that needs to change.
Let's sort of finish at grassroots then. Because we've talked about regulations and we've talked about rules and we've talked about all that kind of stuff and the red tape, would it make a difference? Would it be something that's good, bad? Discuss if estate agents themselves, your guys out on the ground buying and selling and talking to your customers, if there was some kind of qualification, accreditation, would it make a difference? Your thoughts?
Well, there's two distinct parts of that. One is the regulations associated with the lettings part of the industry, and then there's the residential part of the industry. So maybe, James, could you comment on the sort of support that we give from a lettings perspective, because it's already very heavily regulated through ALA, and we support all of our staff through those professional qualifications.
I mean, it's incredibly important in the letting side of the business, because if you look at the main difference for me between the letting side of any estate agency business and the sales side. The sales side is always backed up by solicitors going through the conveyancing process at the end, making sure everything is correct. The letting side of the business doesn't benefit from that specific legal support. So you do it yourself within the business. So that makes it incredibly important to get it right, which means that the training and support for your staff has to be really good. And that's where, you know, ongoing training, development, we put our staff at managerial level through the property market qualifications, which is sort of the benchmark within the lettings industry for best practice and understanding the myriad of laws. Over 140, if you Google it, some places will tell you there's over 400 pieces of legislation. It's definitely way into the 140s, 150s, specific pieces of legislation that letting agents and therefore landlords, if they're not using one, need to be aware of. So that's incredibly important. But I would also say on the sales side of the business, whereas it perhaps isn't quite as vital, it's really important to deliver great service and understanding your industry, understanding your product, as in how you buy and sell property, vitally important. The better you can do that, the better you can talk a buyer and a seller through the process, the more confidence they will have in their choice, you know, from a vendor's point of view, that you're the right person to trust your property with. So I think both ways, really important.
Yeah, we understand the importance of that within our industry, specifically with our business. We've always invested significant amount of time and resources within our training facility. More recently, within our training facility, we've introduced professional qualifications through PropertyMark because we've now become an accredited training centre. So we understand that if you're going to get people to provide the best service to customers, improving their skill set, knowledge and capabilities is a prerequisite in order that your customer base gets the best deal. So in answer to your question, yes, I believe some form of regulation across the industry is essential. Again, there's a lot of rhetoric from previous governments about introducing regulation. So ROPA, Regulation of Property Agents, that we can go back many, many years when there was suggestions about formal introduction of qualifications. And that's always set aside. So it's always comes up as a great idea, but it's never actually been introduced within the industry. So we took the initiative ourselves and we have invested considerable time ensuring that from our point of view, our staff are trained and developed. And we take on board all of the points that James has made regarding the letting side of the business, but also from a residential point of view, we have a massive responsibility to ensure our customers get the best deal. I think there needs to be minimum standards within the industry. It does kind of beg a belief that you can get involved in the housing industry, putting properties on the market, giving people professional advice, and actually not have a professional qualification. I'm not aware of any other country in Europe, certainly across, you know, Europe and the States, where you can trade in this industry without being qualified. We've already taken steps to support that, and I'd welcome government intervention to make that a requirement to actually trade professionally in this industry.
Would that cost the industry, do you think? Would it have any negative on the industry?
I think actually it's... The negative is the bad things that come out of poor practice. So a lot of agents are already fined tens and sometimes hundreds of thousands of pounds for poor practice, whether that's for poor anti-money laundering regulations, from proof of fund audits, where as agents we have to provide almost like a border force for the government when it comes to ensuring that we have ID. And this is all to do with proof of funds and money laundering. So agents are already being charged, fined a lot of money because of those regulations. In actual fact, larger agents also like us, we have to contribute to the government a fund every year in order to support the government's proposals when it comes to anti-money laundering. So we already pay smaller agents and some agents that aren't part of that process, I think are part of this undercurrent where sometimes you get away with it. And our business, we have to continually be pushing the barriers in terms of the fair and reasonable way of conducting your business. And I think legislation is an important aspect of it.
So much like the laws for landlords, you could you could bring in legislation for that as well. So really you're talking about a defence against all the bad stuff.
Yeah.
For you, if you had all your staff qualified, it's a tick. Okay, they're all qualified, they're at a certain level, and that would increase stability.
You're looking to eliminate a certain rogue element.
Yeah.
Now that you get rogue elements in all businesses. But if you have to study and reach a minimum threshold in order to enter the industry. You've got to put some effort into it. And if you don't have to put effort into it to open up a business, then it's likely to attract a rogue element already. And that seems crazy.
We've putting new staff through the property mark qualification. And the feedback that I've had from the staff that have started undertaking that has been entirely, entirely positive. I think they're really grateful to have the opportunity. And I think it's the direction the industry's going in. And I think it's entirely a good thing.
Yeah, it's another level of protection.
Yeah. Well, I also think there's an element of being a rogue agent accidentally, because it's a complicated business these days. I think back when, you know, we probably all started, it was a very straightforward process to go out and put a house on the market and get it sold and hand it over to solicitors to do the job for us. And I think now, as Aldo said, there's a huge amount of legislation and paperwork that we need to implement before we can even put property on the market, whether it's money laundering legislation or EPCs or anything else that has been loaded into the business. So I think knowledge and a qualification can only help to weed out those unwitting rogue agents, because they're doing things wrong and they don't know. So I think there's an element of that, and it is genuinely a tiny amount. I would say our industry, you know, is a very hard working one. I think there aren't that many industries that will do an entire job from start to finish with no guarantee of being paid at the end of the process on a no sale, no fee basis. I'd love to have some work done on my house at the moment. I'd love it if the plumber worked on that basis. But there's very little industries that will actually do that. So there's a lot of positives and good about the industry that don't get mentioned as much as they possibly should do. But certainly professional qualifications, I think, would be good for the industry, the perception of the industry, which is really important, and the people in it. So nothing bad can come out of that.
Don't forget, it's always a good idea to consult with a financial advisor, solicitor, and estate agent to help you navigate the home buying process and answer any additional questions you might have. Thanks again to all our guests for their insights and expertise throughout Series 2. You can check out this episode and our previous episodes at im-listening.co.uk or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening to Series 2 of the Property Podcast with Wards, and make sure you hit the subscribe button. Thanks for listening to the Property Podcast with Wards. If you'd like more information on the subjects that we've covered in this week's episode, just head over to the Wards website at wardsofkent.co.uk, or you can follow us on our social media channels. You can check out our latest episodes at im-listening.co.uk or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
This has been an IM Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, im-listening.co.uk.